Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Over 1,000 illegal aliens is what they estimate are in Montana right now. I had to go back and listen to our conversation with Montana Governor Greg Gianforte yesterday on the show. And you know, sometimes when you're in the middle of a conversation, you know, you're focused on this, you're focused on that. Sometimes you'll make the mistake of just thinking of what your next question is going to be, or maybe I'm, you know, looking at the phone lines to see who our caller is going to be. And I missed that one, but when I listened to it again, yeah, the governor said that, first off, when it comes to the open borders that we saw under the last regime, now complete 180. Now we've got total cooperation, incredible cooperation from law enforcement across the board, from the feds all the way down. You're seeing headline after headline. Well, you may not be seeing the news headlines because the news doesn't necessarily like to cover it that much, but they're finding these illegal aliens, they're arresting them, and then they're getting them the heck out of here. But yeah, the governor said that based off of what the briefings that he's received is that they estimate that there's over 8,000 illegal aliens in the state, with a lot of them in the Gallatin Valley area. So that was one of the big news stories yesterday. Plus, we talked, you know, income tax relief, property tax relief, the need for both of those. We're going to pick up right where we left off with our conversation with the governor yesterday, because, of course, yesterday he joined us on the show just before he went to the White House to meet with President Trump, and this big announcement, Unleashing American Energy. So what took place at the White House yesterday? Well, the Department of the Interior's own website has this headline: the Department of the Interior moves to restore the coal industry. Bullet point number one, they're ending the coal leasing moratorium that, first President Obama put in place, and then Trump Interior Secretary and now Montana Congressman Ryan Zinke. Well, they revoked that one. They unleashed American Energy then. Then, of course, Biden's Interior Secretary rescinds that order and undermines American jobs and American energy. Well, now that has been rescinded once again. So they're ending the coal leasing moratorium. Huge news. They're also reopening federal lands in Montana and Wyoming to coal leasing. They're removing other regulatory burdens for coal mines and providing royalty rate relief. Jared Halpern also has this scene setter for us.
Coal miners join President Trump here as he signed executive orders designed to jumpstart the declining coal industry.
And all those plants that have been closed are going to be opened. If they're modern enough, or they'll be ripped down and brand new ones will be built.
The president says beautiful, clean coal is needed to double U.S. energy capacity needed for AI development. A series of executive orders allows federal land to be used for coal mining and prevents several plants to be shut down. At the White House, Jared Halpern, Fox News.
All right, more on that story right after this. And then what U.S. Attorney Kurt Almy has to say about a surge in FBI resources into Indian country. That and more coming up right after this.
Tackling the issues that shape our state, this is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, great to have Kurt Almy back on the job as U.S. attorney here in Montana. He was appointed by President Trump and confirmed to be U.S. attorney back in President Trump's first term. And President Trump has him back on the job once again. I caught up with Kurt recently here to talk about this big news, this surge in FBI resources into Indian country. And I got to share that with our friends all across the state, especially, you know, in KVCK country, Wolf Point, Poplar. You know, that's been a big topic of conversation, especially with the recent violence and some of the the rallies by locals in the community to condemn that violence. All goes back to open borders and so much more. So we'll get into that here in just a second. But first, yeah, the big news out of the White House yesterday. In fact, I saw a Daily Caller headline featuring Wyoming Senator Cynthia Lummis. She says the country is now back on track with President Trump's effort to boost coal. David Jay had a report for KTVQ Television, one of the MTN stations, noting that Montana's governor and Wyoming's governor, both among those celebrating President Trump's executive orders to increase domestic energy production, including coal. And what about Colstrip? Obviously a positive reception in Colstrip, Montana. Colstrip Mayor John Williams telling David Jay, quote, absolutely, it's a positive message, not only for the benefit of our people, men and women who live and work here in Colstrip, for the state of Montana recognizing the value of coal. He says the president's orders will provide job security for the 650 workers at the coal mine and Colstrip power plants 3 and 4. The mayor says it really sends a strong message to the people, men and women that are working here in Colstrip. Here's the president himself at that announcement yesterday.
We will continue to lower costs for American families, create jobs for American workers, and very importantly, unlock unlimited amounts of affordable American energy, including, as I said, and I'll say for the last time, beautiful, clean coal.
Also beautiful jobs here in Montana, and important jobs for Indian country in particular, especially on the Crow Reservation and Northern Cheyenne. It's huge providers for families, these jobs in coal mining and the power industry and much more. President Trump also gave this shout out to Montana Senator Steve Daines and Tim Sheehy.
Steve Daines. Thank you, Steve. And Steve is a picker of great candidates, like he picked a guy named Tim Sheehy, who's here. Where's Tim? Where's Tim? Thank you, Tim. And Tim Sheehy has turned out to be a wonderful senator, and that was your pick. And we went with it, and you were right. And we have a great one in Tim. So thank you, Tim, and thank you, Steve.
All right, and with coal miners at his back, the DailyWire.com has this great write-up here. President Donald Trump took action on Tuesday to slash regulations and expedite leases for American coal mining, lending a hand to an industry that has been rocked by the push for so-called clean energy. I'm glad that they made that distinction here. So-called clean energy, because you guys know there ain't anything clean about it. There ain't anything clean about these attacks on this beautiful, clean Powder River Basin coal. We all know it. Appearing at the White House, the Daily Caller writes, or the Daily Wire writes here, in front of a group of American coal miners, Trump signed the Defense Production Act, vowing to end the government bias against coal and turbocharge coal mining in America. Trump's order comes as he seeks to boost American energy production and use tariffs as leverage to bring manufacturing and jobs back to the United States. But yeah, on this point of the fact that this so-called clean energy and all these radical environmentalists once again coming out against this news from the White House yesterday, why do they never focus on the coal in China? Why do they always want to tax us but not tariff China? Why do they always want to stop Montana coal but they don't want to stop China coal? Energy Secretary Chris Wright made a point similar on that similar front yesterday on Fox News.
Coal has been the largest source of electricity on the planet for 100 years, and it will be for decades more to come. The belief that, you know, coal is somehow going to sunset and be gone in a decade or two, that's just not happening. That's just, China has under construction today more coal plants under construction than the entire capacity in the United States. So pretending that, you know, closing coal plants in the United States is going to change global greenhouse gas emissions, that's just nonsense. What it is going to do is drive electricity prices higher for American consumers, destabilize our grid, and make it more expensive to produce steel and cement and these other key ingredients in the United States. President Trump's bringing back common sense, and I think everyone wins from that.
All right, and then there was another soundbite here. Let me see if I can play just this one briefly here as well. He was also on CNBC, where he called out these hypocrites in these environmental groups.
But coal, the way to think of dirty is pollutants. American technology for coal has made scrubbers so that the air coming out of coal plants, it's just a white plume like the natural gas plant. That's just water vapor coming out. So no, coal done right is very clean. And that's what we do in the United States. In fact, the United States pulling back from coal has slowed the diffusion of American coal technology to China and India. I would argue we'd have cleaner air in the United States if we focused more on a strong coal industry here and got American coal technology to remove the pollutants from coal power plants into Asia. That would clean American air, not dirty American air.
Now, well said. But see, these environmentalists, they don't actually care about clean air. They just want to shut you down and kick you off the land.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors. Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August.
Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast. Just search our names, Clay and Buck. Listen and subscribe.
That general that we had on Tuesday's Montana Talks, he was the SOCOM chaplain, 49-year career. The story he shared from the first Iraq War, absolutely remarkable. Then Montana Governor Greg Gianforte joined us just before he was scheduled to head to the White House to meet with President Donald J. Trump once again, expecting big news on the energy front. We're going to talk about that and more coming up with Wednesday's Montana Talks, statewide, 9 to 10, right here.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, yeah, last week on the show, we told you when the news was first announced that Trump Attorney General Pam Bondi, FBI Director Kash Patel announcing the big news that they are going to surge FBI resources into Indian country, including right here in Montana, to attack a whole host of open cases, but especially these missing and murdered indigenous women cases in particular. Got a chance to sit down with Kurt Almy. He is now back on the job as the acting U.S. attorney. President Trump selected him to be U.S. attorney during his first term, and he's now back on the job once again.
Thanks, Aaron. Yeah, it's great to get a chance to come back and finish the work we started 8 years ago.
But, man, these last 4 years, whoa. I mean, you look at the crime, the open borders, everything that's going on. I mean, you had a tough job 8 years ago, let alone today.
Yeah, as soon as COVID hit, that changed everything. You know, we were reducing violent crime across the state and bending that crime curve, and then COVID hit and things changed. And now, you know, we're still dealing with a 10% higher crime rate than we had in 2019, even though it started to come back down in the last couple of years. And in Yellowstone County here, it's here in Billings, it's even higher, where it's yeah, we still are up 35% above where we were in 2019. That's down from the high in 2021, thanks to the good work and outstanding efforts of our troopers, our sheriff's deputies, our police officers, our prosecutors, who've been working diligently through the end of COVID and through the last couple of years to try to get back on top of this issue. But we're getting there.
Yep. It was so great to see the news earlier this week. I mean, I've talked at length about the open borders, the illegal aliens, the Mexican drug cartels, the Tren de Aragua, illegal alien gang members in the state. But one of the things we've been talking about over the last several years, you know, during the Biden administration, was they allowed all these illegal aliens to come in, and it helped crime surge, especially in Indian country. And we've been talking about the need for more law enforcement in Indian country. Tribal leaders have been talking about the need for more federal law enforcement. And boom, now, thanks to, you know, President Trump's Attorney General Pam Bondi, FBI Director Kash Patel, and U.S. Attorney Kurt Olmey here, just earlier this week, you announced that news. They're doing just that, surging FBI resources into Indian country.
Exactly right. That's very exciting. Attorney General Bondi, FBI Director Patel announced, it's called Operation Not Forgotten, and they'll be surging 60 FBI special agents over a six-month period out into Native American reservations to help us address unresolved violent crime, including crimes related to missing and murdered indigenous women.
What will those resources do on the ground level?
So they're going to do two things. Some of them will do independent investigations or cold case investigations. Others are going to come in and help take work off the plate of those agents who right now are working those cases. And I want to, you know, say thanks to all the FBI agents, all the BIA agents, tribal law enforcement out there who are working those cases every day.
What's the caseload like for you? I mean, you were on the job before, so you know what the job entails. What's it like stepping into the job now in 2025 compared to 2017?
So, like I said, crime's up. You know, crime's up 10% statewide, or violent crime's up 10% statewide. So there is plenty of work to do, and just so grateful to see the work of our prosecutors and those of the county attorneys across the state, as well as tribal prosecutors who are taking these cases from all of our law enforcement who are putting their lives at risk every day out there working against these drug cartels, drug trafficking organizations, and other violent crime.
You know, it was crazy. I was talking with Toole County Sheriff Tyler Padilla the other day. Shelby, Montana, that's where these Tren de Aragua gang members were arrested at, along with a U.S. citizen who was smuggling these illegal aliens in the country. And as I read through some of the federal court documents, you know, the affidavit put together, I was like, wow, there's a lot of background here. I said, you know, this information must have been compiled over several months, if not years. I said, this didn't just get, you know, basically like this woman and these Tren de Aragua suspects, I imagine, were on federal law enforcement's radar before January 20th of 2025, right? And Sheriff Padilla basically confirmed that. Yeah, I mean, he said that they've had all these encounters with these illegal aliens on, you know, on the northern border chunk of Montana, and they'll get arrested and picked up by local law enforcement. They pass them over to Border Patrol and federal law enforcement, and under the Biden administration, they were just putting these illegal aliens right back out on the streets. And so, but now they're being deported, and the U.S. citizen who's smuggling them is being prosecuted in federal court. It's finally.
Yeah, it's you're reaching right into the primary initiative of the president and the attorney general for law enforcement. It's called Operation Take Back America. Earlier this year, Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche announced it. It has three goals, very similar to the goals we've had before with Project Safe Neighborhood, protecting our communities from violent crime and drug trafficking, and then also two expanded purposes that you're referring to. One of them is to eliminate the cartels and the transnational criminal organizations that have come into our country, and also to stop the large flow of illegal immigrants. So, you know, we've had in our toolbox for some time firearms charges, drug charges, human trafficking charges that we can use when we encounter dangerous people in the community. Now we're going to have our immigration charges at our disposal, too, to help us identify and get these people off the street, either through criminal prosecution or through administrative deportation.
And so I'm assuming when it comes to like some of these cases, like if you have illegal aliens, obviously they can be immediately turned over to ICE and then processed for removal, deportation, et cetera. Or likewise, if they've committed some hardcore serious crimes, prosecuted or other measures that could be put in place. But the U.S. citizens, of course, will be prosecuted if they have a role in this.
That's right. And again, what we're trying to do through Operation Take Back America, and again, it's encompassed part of what we still call Project Safe Neighborhood, which was invigorated in 2017 to help deal with what was then a rising violent crime problem, and as we've talked about, got worse through COVID. The idea here is to focus on identifying the most violent offenders in our communities, including drug dealers, and then getting them off the street. And PSN has been successful. It's proven successful around the country because what happens is we get good collaboration among federal law enforcement, state, tribal, and local. And in Montana, we work together well, and the prosecutors work well, both in our office, tribal prosecutors, and the county attorney's offices, to be sure that we're maximizing resources and getting synergies from working together. And so we're optimistic that with this new this renewed focus through Operation Take Back America and additional resources and focus on the southern border to stop the inflow of additional illegal aliens and hopefully stop the inflow of cartel and transnational criminal organizations, that we're going to start making real headway.
We look at everything that the Trump administration accomplished in his first term as president after the 2016 elections, and you were there to see it firsthand and to see the progress and to see the accomplishments. But man, that the team's even more on fire this go around. But of course, they've got bigger problems on their hands after the last 4 years as well. What's the difference like in the Trump team now compared to, say, 2017 from what you've seen?
Well, I think the problems are different, Aaron, like you pointed out. What's happened with the border and with the surge of illegal aliens coming across the country, and with them, the transnational criminal organizations. MS-13 certainly has a bigger presence here. Tren de Aragua has a bigger presence in the country than we used to have. And the drug cartels are well established in our country. So those problems, the big intransigent problems, are more serious to deal with. And they start at the southern border.
Yeah. Do you think the TDA operatives or the drug cartels or other illegal aliens here in Montana, do you think they're getting the message, or do you think they still think they can hide, they still think they can kind of bide their time?
Well, they should. They should. If you're committing a violent crime in Montana, you will be arrested and you will be prosecuted to the full extent of the law.
Not the time to mess around. I think Dan Bongino used to have an acronym for that, something about messing around and finding out, to use a more family-friendly version of it.
Okay, and then I also talked a little bit more with U.S. Attorney Kurt Almy specifically about, okay, these FBI resources that are being surged into Indian country in particular. What is that going to look like in particular, and how many open cases are there out there in particular? So 4,300 open investigations across Indian country we're looking at here. And a big chunk of that are referred to as the MMIP cases, missing and murdered indigenous persons cases. And so let me get to that here. That's a little bit later on in the conversation. And of course, this full audio is on our Montana Talks podcast. Oftentimes I'm gathering, this statewide 9 o'clock hour of the show goes by so fast, and we sneak in so much content, but the hour flies by and there's only so much you can sneak in. So I gather a whole bunch of other content, and I thought, man, we got to share this conversation with Kurt Almy. With the whole state here. And so we're doing just that. Okay, so here, let me go. Let me make sure I'm queuing it up in the right spot. I think this is it right here, where we focus on the missing and murdered indigenous persons cases.
You were telling me during the break, not only are we going to see a surge in resources dedicated to MMIP, but we're better prepared this time around to go after that problem set as well.
Yeah, we are, Aaron. Thanks for bringing that up. Through the efforts of a lot of other groups, grassroots organizations, nonprofits, as well as emphasis from the Department of Justice and the FBI, the BIA, we're seeing improvement in that area, as well as the state of Montana, I should add. I think the top line item here is we now, all of the tribal communities in Montana have what we call tribal community response plans. So if an individual goes missing, there's a plan that can activate for law enforcement, for non-law enforcement community organizations, and also to get word out to the public about what's happening. So those things can activate, all community resources can be brought to bear to try to locate the person, be sure we get current information on the missing person, help that person be found, and then to communicate with the families and the public.
And the big thing that Kurt Almy, U.S. Attorney Kurt Almy, stressed is that, look, as these additional FBI resources surge in, folks, if you know anything, if you have information, no matter how big or small you think that information might be, you've got to share that information with the authorities so they can track down these folks.
This is where Montana Talks at with Lane Nordlund.
USDA data compiled by the U.S. Meat Export Federation shows beef exports during February were below last year after a higher trend seen in January. Beef exports totaled just over 98,000 metric tons in February, down 5.5% from 2024, while value dropped 4% to just over $800 million. February exports increased year over year to South Korea, Canada, Egypt, and the Philippines. January and February shipments were 1% below last year's pace at just over 201,000 metric tons, but value increased 1% to $1.6 billion. As for February exports of U.S. pork, they were lower than last year as well, despite continued success in Mexico and Central America. February pork exports totaled over 241,000 metric tons, down 4% from the large volume last year. Value dropped 2% to just over $671 million. Exports soared to Central America in February, and export value to Mexico exceeded $200 million for the eighth straight month. For January through February this year, pork exports were 3% below last year's record pace. Again, that data brought to you from USDA and compiled by the U.S. Meat Export Federation. I'm Lee Northlund. Have a great day, everyone.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Oh, man, you got to leave Shelby out of this one. Oh, man, a friend of mine sent me this video on Instagram yesterday. It was this video, and he said this. He said, "You leave Shelby out of this. You leave Shelby, Montana out of this." Yeah, apparently, now I'm trying to find out, is this guy just trying to be funny? Did this actually happen? But it totally seems plausible. So this guy, apparently, he says he was taking his family on a spring break trip to Glacier National Park here in Montana. He was driving an electric vehicle, and he was trying to go to Glacier National Park, and he says that the road to Glacier in Montana is EV hell. EV hell. It's electric vehicle hell. Driver complains of EV hell to Glacier National Park in Montana. But yeah, he talked about pulling into Great Falls, Montana, and getting a full charge on the EV there. And then, you know, he looks up the supercharging stations on the way to Glacier. And it told him that a good charging station was located at the Milk River charging station. Now, the Milk River flows through Montana, as you guys know, but the Milk River charging station is on the Canadian side of the border. So anyway, this guy just unloads, you know, about the EV hell that is Montana and that is the road to Glacier National Park. And I don't know if this guy is serious or if he was just trying to make a funny video, but he ends up just totally trashing Shelby, Montana, which of course is a great community. But here's the thing. Most of you, if some guy from out of state, especially some guy driving some EV from some other state, comes through and then starts trashing your town, normally you'd get a little ticked off. You'd get a little defensive. But now, after all of the influx of people that have moved into Montana, I think a lot of you are happy to get some negative publicity. It was kind of funny to see some of the comments from the people in Shelby who saw this guy's Instagram video. They said, "Yep, you're right. It's awful here. Now get the heck out of here. Don't come back. Tell your friends how awful it is here in Montana so they never come here ever again." I'll play the audio from that Instagram video for you here in just a few minutes. Full thing is on our Montana Talks website as well. First, so hey, let me tell you about this great product from a Montana business, a Montana veteran-owned business. Look, we've been talking about, you know, no pain, no gain. You might have some short-term pain to get that long-term gain. Well, what if you could get the gain and minimize the pain? Power Plus Pain Aid, that's what this Montana veteran-owned business is all about. Think of it like one of those little energy drinks that you might see at a gas station. Except for instead of just energy, it has vitamins as well, vitamins that help relieve some of those aches and pains that you might get from working hard and playing hard, right? That's what Power Plus Pain Aid does. So it's just a short little drink that gives you energy, it gives you power, and it gives you a pain reliever. But it doesn't give you all those nasty chemicals that some of those other energy drinks will give you. It's natural, it's drug-free, made in America, third-party tested. Check it out. Go to drinkpowerplus.com. And if you enter this code at checkout, Flint15, Flint15, enter that code at checkout. You get 15% off your orders at drinkpowerplus.com. All right. Hey, we should be able to sneak in some of your phone calls here in a few minutes as well. If you got something you want to talk about here on Montana Talks, of course, we always enjoy hearing from you. You can send us a message on the Montana Talks app as well. I got this. I saw this headline yesterday. I got this news in my email inbox. Here's the headline. Does MFPE support racists? Does the Montana Federation of Public Employees support racists? Maxford Nelson with the Freedom Foundation now with us once again here on Montana Talks. Yeah, Max, man, you've really been exposing the far-left antics of the MFPE. Tell us what you dug up here since the last time we caught up.
Well, thanks for having me on the program, Aaron. And the biggest challenge sometimes in documenting and bringing to light some of the extreme leftism and even outright Marxism of groups like the Montana Federation of Public Employees is just the sheer quantity of information out there, because these guys really are true believers. They are power players on the institutional left. And, you know, they're not particularly shy about it. So in this case, you know, we were going over the annual financial statement that was filed by the Montana Federation of Public Employees, which, as the name implies, is the union that represents most government workers in Montana, teachers, municipal employees, many state workers as well. And it is about as far left as you can get as an organization. And there's different ways that you can prove that we've talked about before. You know, we've gone over how the professional development conference that the union hosts for teachers is just rife with woke material and partisan politics. We've talked about how the books it distributes to school libraries are meant to steep students in progressive ideology. We've talked about their overt political advocacy skewing overwhelmingly to the left. But this is an analysis of how the MFPE uses its members' dues money to contribute to an array of controversial far-left organizations and causes.
Let me highlight that for just a moment, Max. So, because what they'll say is, well, we don't use the union dues for political activities. We have a separate, you know, like campaign account where people can donate to, and that's what we use for political stuff. But the union dues, that just goes to help out with union stuff. So what you're saying is, no, this is very clearly not the case. You're saying this is what their union dues are actually going to.
Correct. And this is nothing I'm making up. This is an official government report filed by the union itself. This is what they've disclosed to the U.S. Department of Labor on their most recent financial statement. And this is all being paid for with members' dues. And so there's organizations receiving grants from MFPE, like a group called A Better Big Sky. That's a progressive nonprofit based in Missoula. It, in turn, A Better Big Sky, writes six-figure checks to political committees working to elect progressive justices to the state Supreme Court. It's written six-figure checks to other political committees that oppose GOP congressional candidates in Montana. It contributes five-figure amounts to an array of other progressive organizations, including Planned Parenthood, Montana Conservation Voters, Montana AFL-CIO. They've given to groups such as the Montana Human Rights Network, which, as innocuous as it sounds, works to promote, quote, LGBTQ2S+ equality.
And this is the first time I've heard that acronym, by the way. They just added some numbers into the equation here. Well, I was just going to say the Montana Human Rights Network is basically a far-left hate group. They target Christians. They constantly bash Christians. They're just a far left hate group is basically how they should be seen.
That sounds like a pretty fair summary from where I'm sitting here. But that gives you a taste of the types of organizations that are receiving members' dues money from the MFPE. Now, the title, you know, of our report, as you mentioned, is basically posing the question, does the MFPD support racists? And it's a little tongue-in-cheek here, but one of the organizations that MFPD contributed to last year was $12,600 to a group called the Western Organization of Resource Councils. And that's another progressive nonprofit group. It's essentially a supporting and coordinating hub for a network of other far-left groups in the Mountain States region. And it gives money, as we've talked about, this, to many of these similar progressive organizations. Like
Radical environmentalists mainly is what the WRSC does to. Yeah, to fight American jobs, oil, gas, coal, you name it.
But not just that. Planned Parenthood as well receives support from that organization and Montana Human Rights Network. Well, they also, WROC work, I guess, has a statement on its website, a Black Lives Matter statement on its website, which just trashes the United States, of course, for its quote-unquote horrendous pattern of police and societal brutality and its, quote, normalized institutional and systemic racism against Black, Indigenous, and people of color. Well, so ingrained, according to this organization, is racism in America today that even the Western Organization of Research Council itself writes that deep institutional racism grounded in white supremacy still exists and, quote, racism exists within our organization. So don't take my word for it.
They're admitting that they are racist, these woke, white, elitist liberals that want everybody else to be dependent on them, that think they know better than everybody else, they can run our lives. They admit that they're racist on their own website. What a stunning admission here. Now, Max, you've got this whole report, this whole updated report on your Freedom Foundation website now, right?
Correct, yes. It's up on the homepage at freedomfoundation.com. The title of the article is, Does the Montana Teachers Union Support Racist Organizations? As you mentioned, this is the latest in a series of investigative pieces that we've published over the last few months that highlight just the outright ideological and political extremism of the Montana Federation of Public Employees.
All right.
All available on our website, freedomfoundation.com.
Well, that's great. Freedomfoundation.com. Max Nelson, thanks for your time. Great report as always. Stand by. Did you?
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, I want to sneak in some of your phone calls here, and I got to play this audio from the EV driver talking about the road to hell, I mean the road to Glacier. How it's an EV hell. I'll play that here in a second. And then I also want to go back to Max Nelson, too, to talk about a bill in the legislature right now which could help to rein in the leftist MFPE. It already got through the finish line in the House. They just needed to get through the state Senate, and then it could go to the governor. So we got to tell you about that one before we run out of time. John in the Flathead on the phone lines. John, what's on your mind this morning?
Yeah, last night I was watching the local NBC News out of Missoula, and they had a woman on there that's the head of an organization called Humanities Montana, and they operate on a $1 million grant from the federal government every year, and she had just gotten a letter that the grant would not be coming this year, and she was bitching about it. And then so the reporter, he did some digging into their financials. And in the latest financials, they got $1 million from the federal government. And of that $1 million, only $184,000 went out in grants around Montana.
Yeah, that humanity. Oh, yeah, keep going, sorry.
$417,000 for salaries and benefits, and another $400,000 for miscellaneous expenses. So out of that $1 million, only 18% went where it should have went, which is, you know, this is going on with thousands and tens of thousands of grants around the USA where the money doesn't go where it's supposed to. It goes to salary and benefits and embezzlement, et cetera. And 18%, you compare that to Tunnel to Towers, you know, who builds homes and pays off mortgages for our fallen heroes' families. You know, 94% of their money goes directly to where it should be. And this, I couldn't believe this woman was complaining.
I'll tell you what, that Humanities Montana, you really hit on a topic there, John. I'm glad you called in. We need to talk more about this maybe tomorrow on the show, because far left ideological train wreck. Those guys, they gave, I can't remember how much money they gave to the white guy at the University of Montana with the African American Studies Department. They funneled money into that guy's pocket, even though he was a former board member for them, to push his anti-white, anti-America garbage. I'll tell you what, the Humanities Montana has been a prime target for Doge for a long time, and thankfully Doge is finally focusing in on it. Yeah, thanks for calling in on that one. I appreciate it. Let me real quickly, I want to play this video, the audio. This is from at Nate Jorgensen on Instagram talking about the EV hell to Glacier National Park. Let me see if I can get it back queued up here. Here we go.
I get to Great Falls, Montana. We get a full charge, and it's telling us that the next stop is Glacier National Park. As we're getting there, I guess we're not going to make it, so it reroutes us to another charging station, supercharging station called Milk River. And I didn't know this, but it was in Canada. And this wouldn't be a problem, but I didn't have my passport and all the appropriate documentation that I need to enter into another country. So we get there. I explain to them what happened. They give us a search. They check our vehicle. They put us in this interrogation room, ask us all these questions. I mean, I get why they're doing it. They have to be careful. And shame on me for not having the appropriate paperwork. I get it. But yeah, it was very inconvenient. They turned us away. I had to go back to this town called Shelby. It's in Montana. And yeah, it's a dump. And it's like meth labs and crackheads everywhere. And I got one charging station that's giving me like 3 kilowatt hours. Yeah, so crazy.
Yeah, man, you leave Shelby out of this. A friend of mine who sent me that video. You leave Shelby out of this. I mean, I get it that you're ticked off that you can't charge your EV for Pete's sake, but you should have known that. But don't dump on the great community of Shelby just because you're pissed off at your EV. All right, we got a little bit of time left here. I want to go back to Maxford Nelson with the Freedom Foundation. Max, you know, we were talking about the woke left-wing Montana Federation of Public Employees using union dues to fund all these crazy left-wing organizations and political activities. There is a bill that could help, House Bill 557 by Jody Etchart. It's already cleared the House, just got to get it through the Senate, apparently.
Yes, it's moving through the Senate at the moment. We just had a committee hearing on the bill before the Senate Education Committee yesterday afternoon. And hopefully that will clear the committee in the coming days and make it to the Senate floor. But, you know, the issue from our standpoint, you know, as a conservative organization, when far-left unions are engaged in activity like this, it's twofold. First of all, members of the union need to know that they don't have to support these organizations. They have a constitutional right to resign their membership, stop paying dues to support this kind of activity if they choose to. But the other issue is that taxpayers shouldn't be required through state policy, through state law, to subsidize these kinds of organizations. So Representative Etchart has just been an absolute bulldog on this issue this session, and her bill, House Bill 557, wouldn't solve all the problems, but it's a great step forward. It would prevent public school teachers from using some of their paid time off that's supposed to be for people instruction-related time to do things that are school-related, teacher-related functions, but not necessarily in the classroom. Maybe that's paperwork or parent-teacher conferences. Well, what we've learned is that teachers are using, and districts are allowing, and actually state law permits,
basically for politics and left-wing indoctrination. Yeah, sorry, we're just about out of time. I should have given you a time hack there. But Max Nelson, yeah, check out the full report, freedomfoundation.com. Great update.